Hey, gang, I don't know how you're listening to this podcast, but Stitcher is one way you can, just by streaming it onto your phone. Stitcher is smart radio, on-demand news, talk, and more for your mobile phone or pad. Stitcher brings radio and podcast listeners a better way to listen to their favorite shows and helps them discover new content by delivering personalized audio streams on demand right to your smartphone or pad. How did I get here? Along with over 5,000 other shows is on Stitcher. Listen to us on your iPhone, Android phone, or any of the pads. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Find it in your app store at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here? And now here is your host.
I'm Johnny, I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I have a fantastic show for you guys today. We have the return of Roxy Rocha. Yeah. Errol and Tay come back and we sit down and talk about their new album that comes out next Tuesday, February 24th, 2015 on Stag Records. It is called Ain't Nothing Fancy. It was produced by my dear friend Lars Gornson, and they recorded it live, all live, band in a room, even singing, everything, over at Ear Studios, that's owned co-owned by Stephen Doster, who was just on the show. It will be released next Tuesday, February 24th, on vinyl, CD, and of course, download. And their release show will be February 25th, Wednesday, at Seaboys in Austin, Texas. And then they're going to head out on tour. So you guys get out there to RoxyRocha.com, find out where they're playing. We have a great conversation, man. Great conversation about how they made the album, sort of like the challenges of touring with a big band. They just got a bus, which is pretty exciting for them. And maybe it would be exciting for me if they took me for a ride. That's all I have to say. Anyway, I've got a shirt coming to me from them, which is good. We find out that Errol and Tay are not into Spotify, but not for the reasons that you would think. Now listen, this Spotify conversation has been a long, ongoing conversation. Today I met with some people that are going to introduce me to some people from Spotify. So maybe I can get their take on it. Maybe I can get everyone in here. Like to get some people in here arguing back and forth. I bring it up a lot because it is a new way that people are consuming music. It's once again a streaming way. It doesn't take up space on whatever device you're listening to it on. A lot of people listen to it on their phone. Some people listen to it on their tablets. Some people listen to it on their computers. But I find that almost everybody that is against Spotify is like a Netflix fan. But I think that is kind of weird because they both are doing the same thing. Look, I'm a fan of both. I listen to Spotify. I watch stuff on Netflix. Okay. I also buy music. I buy vinyl. I buy CDs when I can. I buy merch from bands. I go to see shows. I try not to ask to be on the guest list. A lot of times I get offered. I just got offered by Taylor Muse to be on the guest list Saturday night at the Quiet Company record release. I'm excited about that. I'll be there with Bells On. I love that band. And also my friends Wild Adriatic will be playing that night. They will be on the show on Tuesday. They came to town to live for a little while, and they will be playing at 7:30 that night, so make it a night, man. Maybe go there and see all the music that's going on. Check out these guys from New York, Wild Adriatic. They're fantastic. This will be at Empire Control Room this Saturday, February 21st, okay? I will be there. I will also be at the Roxy Rocha Seaboys record release on February 25th, 2015. So, man, you know, this is a great week of new records, okay? And sit back and enjoy my conversation that's coming up soon with Errol and Tay. Always great to talk to them. What's going on with me? Let me tell you what's going on with me. My friend Nicole came from New York. She manages that band Wild Adriatic along with the band Sphinx and the band Black Taxi. And she stayed here while she did some business. And she was into Tinder. She was like, oh, yeah, check this out. So I got on. And, man, I did it for a couple of days. I can't do it, man. The whole, like, fake meeting and, like, I don't know. It's just weird. It's weird. Maybe I'm old, you know? Maybe it's my age. I feel like I have to have some kind of vibe with someone, and then I'll ask them for their number. I don't know how some quirky profile, like, oh, hey, I'm, you know, don't know smokers or what, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know how that's going to make you want to check. I mean, obviously if someone's cute, you want to, you know, swipe right, but what are you getting yourself into? Who is this person? What's their fucking baggage? Don't you want to meet them and kind of, but then you're going to go, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I just, it's not for me. I mean, tweet at me. I'm at Johnny Gowdy. Tell me what you think of that stuff, man. I don't subscribe to it because I don't get it. And what these guys are talking about in this interview, it's funny what Errol and Tay and I talk about in this interview about Spotify, and their take on it is there's no real work on it. You just kind of get a song if you want it, right? You just push it and there you go. You hear the song you want. There's no investment of your time or anything. So maybe it's not that worth it. Well, that's what I feel with the Tinder and the online dating stuff, because I feel like it's just confusing. I mean, seems like no one's on there just to fuck either, because I mean, that's what you'd think it would be for. You know, like, oh, hey, I can't afford a hooker, but I have this thing on my phone. Want to come over? Have condoms and lubes. You know, I don't know. It's very confusing to me. Skyrocket, we got to go play a little midweek show over there in Houston. We went and played a fundraiser for my mom's alma mater, St. Thomas University, and my aunt Olga, who both went and graduated from that college. We went to Houston, and we played a great show there. I got to ride there with my friend Kyle Crusham. We had great conversations on the way there, great conversations on the way back. It was a real fun show. It was a long show. There was a long in-between sound check and gig. It was 4.5 hours of just hanging at that hotel waiting to play this gig. But we had there's something about us that happens when they have a big fundraiser like this and they have like auction stuff, they have jumbotrons all over the place, and they you know, so they film the band usually like the first hour and a half. Let me tell you something. Skyrocket is a band that definitely, when you put cameras on us, we give you camera stuff. I think that's a good way to put it. We're a bunch of hams, and it was just fun. It was fun to do. Great ride back with Kyle, and got to see my friend Nicole off. She was great. Always great hanging out with her. She's a great music business person and a great friend. Ally, that's what I would call her. Okay, let's talk to some more allies of mine. How about my friends Errol and Tay from the band Roxy Roca? Their new album Ain't Nothing Fancy comes out on Tuesday, February 24th, 2015 on vinyl, CD, and download, produced by my dear friend Lars Gorenson. And they also, they recorded this album live, man. Let's talk about this. Let's talk to Errol and Tay from Roxy Roca, and you guys have a great weekend. Let's get down.
My game's all wrong, but when you get so close to me, feel like I'm gonna explode. Every glance I steal from you, feel like a TKO. If looks can kill, then you're twice a thrill.
Yeah,
yeah.
Good. Good sign.
I'm really proud of you guys, man. I know that sounds weird, but I feel I've been in this since the ground floor. Like, I should have invested.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I should have bought.
Because I'd be getting some return. You guys cool? Your headphone levels are there. They're
okay.
They're too
this
weird.
This is great.
Yeah, it's great.
I could record like this.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'm ready to go.
Okay. So you guys recorded live with Lars?
Yeah.
We did.
Yeah.
How did that go?
It was really good.
I mean, it sounds great, but
thank you.
Like, how long did you, like, how live?
Yeah, live. I mean, everything in one room. Everything.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
man.
That was 9 musicians in one room. We did it at EAR, East Austin Recording. Because they had just a big room.
Did you bring in an extra keyboard player?
No. Well, we had a keyboard player
right.
At the time. So the lineup at the time was guitar, bass, drums, keyboards. We had a 4-piece horn section.
Oh, okay.
And and the vocals. And it's kind of, you know, the lineup has changed a bit since then. And we tour now with 7. So we lost one horn and lost keyboards and haven't added that back. It's just for touring. It's been pretty practical.
Yeah.
We're having a little bit trimmer, meaner, leaner, meaner.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But you guys have been touring a lot, and you've been going around, and you're about to do it again. You start on like the 3rd of March.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just been, you know, keeping moving, you know, for a lot of reasons, partly just practical. You know, when you have a big band, you have to play a lot.
Yeah.
You have to make money.
We played and over 200 shows last year, right?
Yeah.
You did?
Yeah. And this year, the calendar's booked solid all the way up into the summer right now.
And you guys got a booking agent? When did that happen?
Yeah, that's pretty new. Yeah. I mean, a lot of things just happened. It's a lot of stuff that was in the works for a pretty long time. And then things kind of got, backburnered over the holidays. And then January 1st hit, everybody got back to work. And we, signed our record deal and signed with the booking agent and a whole bunch of other stuff like that all just happened.
Fasten your seatbelts, man.
It really was. It was just all at once. Like, here we go.
Who is Stag Records?
So that's Jesse Dayton's label.
Love Jesse.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't know he had a label.
Yeah, yeah. Well, because he's so prolific. I mean, he's
making
so
movies.
Many, making movies and Broadway shows and.
Oh yeah, other, yeah. I mean, just, kinky.
He's all over the place.
Yeah.
And his all these different side projects. He's just really prolific. And so I think it was in, I might get this wrong. It was like 2001 or somewhere around there. That's when they started that label up.
Wow.
And so they're, partnered with two other people, but it was, it was founded as a vehicle for all of his output, and then it kind of grew from there, putting out stuff by other artists that kind of fit the mold of music he liked and stuff like that.
He was the guy that signed you then?
Well, Gary Moore is one of the partners. That was, really our kind of our connection, and we've been working with Gary for a long time, and he's the one that brought us to Jesse and Benji, who's the other partner in the label. They kind of make all those decisions together, and we brought the record to them, and they were all into it. And
so you had the record made, and you were gonna Did you guys do a Kickstarter?
No.
You just kind of
you
recorded live and fast.
We just did it, on our own dime. It was a 4-day session, everybody in one room, and just did a couple of takes of each song, and that was it.
Took the best one.
That's the record. Vocals, live, everything.
Man, you can tell you guys have played 200 shows, or a year, Like,
yeah.
That in itself is a pretty impressive sounding record, and to know that you guys, did you even play to a click or something? Or
No click. It was just hit record.
Just in the danger zone.
Just rip. There were a lot of reasons why we did it. I mean, finances were a huge part of it.
One of them is also the style of music that you make, and especially in the position that you're in now. And this is like your first record.
Yeah.
It has to be like this, or you're not really making any kind of statement.
We felt that way.
That was part of it. Part of it was just, hey, this is a record we can afford to make. And part of it was, this is kind of making a statement, the kind of record we wanted to make. Something that shows that this is what we can do. This is what we sound like. This is what we do. These are the arrangements. And we felt like, it's a good test of how strong are the songs, how strong are the arrangements. If they don't hold up, that we can fix it by overdubbing 100 more tracks, or maybe it's just a sign that maybe it's just not a very strong arrangement. And so, we rolled with it for better or for worse.
When you guys were working with Lars, did he get involved at all in the music? Like, was there pre-production? It seems like pre-production was like the last 5 years of touring.
It pretty much was. he was really helpful, but he was really very kind of hands off as far as that part of it went. Like, he would really we recorded more songs than we actually put out, and he put in some input there, just saying like, that one's just, it's not really flooring me. And so I thought, all right, well, maybe we'll just let that one.
It's good to have a guy like that that's not shy to tell you when he's not being floored. And
Lars,
that's like the nicest way.
Yeah.
I can imagine someone translating Lars's, that's not flooring me.
Yeah. Well, we all know Lars well in this room. And shy is not a word I think anyone's ever used to describe him. But it's a lot of what we wanted. When we were looking at who do we want to make this with, he was at the top of our list. He just has a track record of working with all these, blues and roots artists and making these kinds of, kind of earthy, kind of close to the metal kind of records like that. And
I bet it's exciting for him to get to go out and make a live record, because I bet he doesn't get to do that much.
He was pretty, seemed like, he just had a lot of enthusiasm for the project. And, we went around to a lot of different studios to see where, what place has the right room to do it in. And EIR was great. They actually, we needed baffles like crazy, because we had nine musicians in one room. And James they built like these huge gobos, you know, just, you know, thick and tall so that we could, because the lead singer's right next to the horn section, like 3 feet from him. And you needed some isolation to be able to mix stuff. And so those, they built for our session, and it was really cool to be somewhere that they were into the record, into the idea of doing what we were doing, and kind of sort of pitched in on it, helping make the environment happen that we needed to make it happen.
That's great. And I like it because it's old school, and you're like, you know, you're definitely paying respect to...
You feel that way when you're making a record like that. You feel like it's very old school.
Yeah.
Like the way when they didn't have a choice of how they were going to record it. And you get that feeling when you're in there, and there's some magic to that. Yeah. That studio is also very cool, I mean, aesthetically. I mean, it's a beautiful studio, and it's very old school. It's set up kind of like Abbey Road, right?
With
the control rooms upstairs. Yeah. And, you know, so you feel there's a little bit of that going back in time feeling just being in there.
Yeah.
So that was cool.
But so Lars was really just kind of guided things along, and you know, from working with him before, that's one of the things I know that he always kind of brings to the table is that, hey, we've, you know, this is how much time we have. This is what we need to get done. And I'll make sure that happens without freaking everybody out.
Yeah.
You know, he never really gives you the feeling that the clock is being watched, but you know that it is.
Yeah.
He just sort of has that covered. And that was cool. And
the honesty thing, too, that's always like whenever I've worked with him, I would say, I mean, he's great at what he does. And that's the main reason. Mm-hmm. Second one is definitely like I like someone that doesn't hold back.
Yeah.
And also you can argue with him on stuff. Like, you know, when it really applies to you or it's just his taste, you know what I mean? And
right.
He's pretty good about that too.
Yeah. 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 From past.
And he's a great hang. Like, I enjoy being in the same room as
he's
him.
He's fun to be around.
Always do.
Yeah. 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 No, he's got a million stories, and he just has an encyclopedic knowledge of
recording.
This style of music, just recording in general, but the technical and musical side, you know, we can talk about any, you know, Little Richard track, and he can tell you what mic was used and what room it was recorded in and how, you know, so when you say, how do we get that sound? You know, he really knows.
Yeah.
And that's important too. You know, it's hard. We were trying to make a record that had sort of this vintage vibe, but we didn't want to take it too far. We wanted to sort of acknowledge that, this is the year it is now, and this is the recording technology we have now, and you know, so you know, it can have some more high fidelity aspects to it. We don't have to take it too
doesn't
far.
Doesn't have to be mono or something to enjoy
exactly. It. Yeah. And so that was a lot of the pre-production kind of discussion, like what kind of choices are we going to make? You know, where does tape fit into it? Where does certain mics fit into it? You know, what's the real kind of sound we're trying to craft? And I think that's one of the things where I'm personally most happy about, that I feel like we really bridged the gap pretty nicely. I think it's a pretty today punchy sounding kind of
production. Yeah, definitely is.
But,
no pun intended with calling punchy.
Sure. Yeah, that word just comes up. Going a little inside on
it. There's like one person that's listening to this is like, oh, they sounded dude.
But that it has that, but then, you know, doing it live and you know, using certain mics and recording to tape and stuff like that kind of gives it a vintage vibe. I think it came across the way we wanted it to. And a lot of it was just the pregame. You know, that's, I think, the big thing. There was so much pre-production discussion with the band, kind of really getting everyone's mind wrapped around the idea that this is what we're doing. However good we are on the day that we go into the studio, that's how good the record's going to be. There's not a lot of fixing that can or will happen. We just got to get, you know, get the take that has the right vibe. And sometimes that's the one that maybe you clammed a note on.
Yeah.
But that's the one.
But this one's got the best vocal track.
Right.
But we got this thing going on over here.
Yeah.
No!
Yeah.
So
That I think that comes from even from the first time I saw you guys. I think that there's another way that you pay respect to the guys that came before you, and that is you leave it on the stage. Like, there's no... I just remember that, like, July or August where you guys were playing in Stubbs and just, like... I mean, you took your jacket off maybe halfway through the show, Tay, but rest of you guys, fucking full-on suit. Like sweating and dancing your ass. Yep. Like everybody throws down when they go. And I feel like that's probably like, I was talking about this with T-Bird and the Breaks,
uh-huh.
like about you guys and how it must, when you play that kind of music, you can't, I mean, there's, it's totally the opposite of phoning it in.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
I just watched that James Brown movie and then this documentary on HBO about him. And there's no, like, you know, your whole life revolves around, like, you're going to, like, bleed.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I've seen that in you guys, and I think that that's a great thing, and I know that that probably earns fans pretty quickly when you go to places, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, we play places, and there are people are saying, like, that's just ridiculous. Why are you wearing a suit when you know you're going to sweat that much?
Yeah.
And it's just like, I don't know. To us,
because you want to look part clean.
Of it. It's part of it, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a thing we talk about, you know, just playing every show like it's our last show.
Yeah, that's
it really could be. That's always a possibility. It's always a possibility that anytime you get on stage that could be the last chance you ever get to do it. And
you're right. And I think something happens to a band also when they go on tour. You become cognizant of the fact that this is what you're doing. Like, you just, like, you've not been home for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Like, you, however long the show is, you got to tell these people that have never seen you before to tell their fucking friends, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And you make yourself better and you become more focused. There's no throwaway out there.
Yeah.
Because even if there's six people, when you come back, you want there to be 12.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
You got to make your show unforgettable.
Yeah.
In some way. I mean, there's people, was it like, I don't know, you might remember the quote, but Bobby Rush had a quote.
Yeah.
It was something like that. Like, if you build a show.
Yeah, like something to the effect of that it's like, a great record doesn't make a great career, but a great show makes a great career.
That's right.
Yeah.
And especially now.
Yeah.
You know?
It's like if you have a guaranteed good show, you can, you know, sell out 1,000-seaters all over the country for a very long time and be very fortunate. That's a career.
Yeah.
That's a big time career.
Totally.
You know? And
yeah, so and it could be hard, you know, there's, you know, cuz we're tired all the time on the road. It's just, I think everybody
is. Is it just you guys? There's no extra person? Is there a person?
He means it's
driver,
just the band touring. Yeah,
we drive. A sound person, merch person.
We do it all.
We, you know, well, up until very recently, we were just in a van.
Right. Oh, yeah. What'd you go get? You just got a new vehicle.
Yeah, yeah. No, we got a bus.
Yeah, bus.
But up until now, it's been a van. And so we put seven people plus all the gear plus all of our personal clothes and things like that. No trailer. Yeah. Yeah.
We just crammed in there. We had this plywood get up. We took the back row of seats out and had this plywood cut out to fit the ceiling, and we like piled all the gear behind that, and we were sitting with suitcases between us and pillows under our legs, and then when we get to the hotel, it gets even better because then we have to try and cram seven people in one hotel room.
Yeah,
and snake around because you're not really supposed to be doing
that.
Right.
And we bring our gear in because we don't want to get ripped off. So it's seven guys and all the gear in one hotel room. That was what the 200 shows last year looked like.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jesus.
So, no joke.
We didn't mess around.
Yeah.
So you're going to have a person that drives this bus?
Well,
bus driver, move this bus.
Yeah.
And getting ready in suits is not as easy as like throwing the black tee on and the skinny jeans and, you know.
Yeah, yeah, so we're in that room with the ironing board out and the
steamer
and it's like a laundromat in there.
Hey, speaking of which, like, how do you guys handle, like, is there like a band fund that handles the dry cleaning or does everyone have to pay for their own dry cleaning?
Talk him into that right now.
How funky do these suits get on the road?
You
bring a couple.
We figured out a couple of things. I mean, like, one, you can take them off right when you get home and you can kind of steam them a little bit and turn them inside out or something. And
that's all right.
Amber alert. Uh-oh. Hold on.
Old lady got her car stolen in Galveston and I got to deal with it now.
See what you can do about that.
Now it's on my podcast.
Okay.
So sorry.
We steam them down, and we have. Yeah. I think Errol came up with a concoction that's like Tito's vodka and something else. It's like
one of the things I learned from this is like a Broadway thing that all like the people that are responsible for all the costumes and stuff like that on Broadway they spray them down with vodka, and that kills bacteria.
Yeah,
so it works really well, and it smells delightful.
Yeah.
So you can
until you get pulled over by the cops,
right? Exactly.
Your suit smells like vodka.
Maybe it's a bit of an issue, but
but the smell goes away after a little while.
Sure. Yeah, it's great. You know, there's a lot that you can do, and I'm in there washing stuff in the sink and just making it happen because we can't really go to a dry cleaner. We don't have time. Yeah. So you just roll. You just go and keep going.
I was thinking about this today. I was thinking about it. I was like, how do they deal with that all the time on the road?
Yeah.
When I was looking at your schedule.
Yeah. Well, it's a little bit of a point of a pride, I would say, because there are a lot of bands out there that we've seen over the past, say, decade here that that kind of started out, you know, doing the wardrobe thing,
right,
kind of making it look sharp. And then as soon as they go on tour, that's over.
Yeah.
And you start seeing all their tour photos and they're in jeans and T-shirts. And,
yeah.
And I'm not judging them for their decision.
But in your thing.
But I saw, you know, I really don't want to do that. And so we had to kind of make a conscious decision ahead of time that, hey, when that time comes, we're just going to deal with it. We'll figure it out. But let's make the decision now that when that time comes, we're going to hold on to that. And it made it easier because it felt like, well, that decision was already made. We're not going to second guess it now.
Right.
And we just do it. And, you know, it's a real assembly line process in there. It's like, hey, guys, I got the iron out. Who needs?
There's a lot of pluses, you know? Too. I mean, you can get away with a lot of shit in suits that you can't get away with.
Yes, you can.
I mean, you can walk into places you're not supposed to be.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You can get sat when you're not supposed to get seated.
Mm-hmm. And I think it makes a statement visually to the audience when you go on stage. It's like.
Yeah. And if you do get pulled over by the cops, you can be a gospel group really easily.
Exactly.
You know, you can just like, we're the Shepherd Boys from Austin, Texas. And next thing you know.
But checking into a hotel, you know, in a suit, it's all, you know, hello, sir. How can we help you, sir?
Yeah.
You get treated so much better. And when you make requests, they get taken seriously. Just a guy in a suit gets far. And I remember, and we've seen that for a while, you know, like at South by Southwest.
That should be the name of this episode. A guy in a suit gets far.
A guy in a suit gets far. I got into so many different things over the past year or two at South by that I had no bit, that I'm clearly not allowed to be in, just walking backstage, and it's just you're in a suit and nobody stops you.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm going to wear a suit this whole
time. You should wear a suit next year.
Yeah, because I don't have a badge.
Yeah, getting into, you know, things that are badge only, sold out, and there's, you know, there's the backstage kind of tech entrance, and you just walk in, and everyone just gives you a nod, and you're in a suit. So clearly nobody in a suit would be up to no good. So,
right.
That's not a judgment.
That's the real reason we wear suits.
I mean, it might be. It's served us well. So it has its advantages.
Hey, these low gas prices are probably really exciting.
Yeah.
It's very exciting.
It's nice, right?
Very exciting.
Yeah. I don't know how long it'll last, but.
Is this a diesel bus, right?
Yeah.
And so that's still lower.
Yeah, lower than it's been.
Yes.
So we're.
That was good timing.
Yeah, we're taking advantage of it, enjoying it, not counting on it, but enjoying it while it lasts. And looking forward to having more room now, being able to stretch out and walk around. It's been, I'm just been really exciting that, like,
to stand up. Is
to stand up, to be rolling down the road and know that I can microwave a burrito, right?
Yeah.
Just because I can.
You gonna have cable? Or okay. Satellite.
We kind of, you know, we did back off on the satellite. I won't lie. We eyed it pretty carefully and thought, you know, maybe we're taking this too far.
How do you guys handle? I mean, this is a thing because people that aren't in bands and are listening to this don't realize that there's like this social etiquette. Like a person can't call their lady in the van and talk for an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Just straight up while a bunch of people are sitting. Right?
Yeah, that's so then also, that just kind of happens naturally. It has.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, like you find little spots to sneak away and get.
Right, but there's things that people that aren't in bands don't realize. Like, hey, why did that band break up? Well, you know what? There's one guy, fucking annoying. He would talk to his chick every day for 2 hours on the fucking phone, and no one could say anything, and you're just sitting there listening to this lame-ass conversation about what you did yesterday. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then, like, music, like. 9 people, probably don't agree on every record being played. So is there a lot of headphone action?
There is a lot of headphone stuff. It's a lot of the van itself was pretty quiet most of the time because Errol's always working. You know, he's working on something, and then a lot of people just had headphones on, and then the driver usually just plays whatever he wants. And if someone doesn't want to listen to it,
that's a general band rule.
Yeah, the driver gets to listen.
Yeah,
and then when I drive, a lot of times I don't listen to anything because it's like I just. kind of zone out.
You use that time to kind of meditate. Yeah, you either a little bit. You guys might. You seem like you would meditate.
Yeah, I do.
You do?
Yeah, I'm kind of what they call off my regular meditation routine right now. But I've
you got a record. You got a record release coming up, so
yeah, it's been busy. We've been busy.
Yeah,
I've kind of fallen off a lot of those things. But there's
seems like though that time is when you'd really need it the most.
True. That's the that's
the irony.
Yeah. That's the catch. Yeah.
Yeah.
So how do you do it? I mean, normally
when I meditate.
Yeah.
I usually set a timer about 20 minutes. I get quiet and focus on my breath, breathing in deeply through my nose,
right,
filling my stomach with air, and then exhaling through my nose, and yeah, that's it.
And
don't overthink
it. You don't have a mantra?
What's that? I don't have a mantra right now. I don't. You know, I know it works for a lot of people, and but for me, I've just always focused on my breath. And after a while, the natural sound of the inhale and the exhale kind of zones you out, and then that's kind of like my mantra, I guess.
Wow. When you come out of it.
Someone gave me one for a while. It was like Sat Nam, I think was the, and just repeating Sat Nam over and over again, which I think means like my name is the truth or something. But
oh, that's good.
I just, I did use that for a while because if it's a word that doesn't have a lot, if it's a mantra that doesn't have a whole lot of meaning to you, it helps with your mind not going other places.
Right.
Like if my mantra was like, I rock or something, you know, it would be like, I would just be thinking about music every time I said it.
That would be fun. I like that.
You know, that would be one I was going to give to you, Errol. Oh, just like, man. But it's.
So did you? How did you learn it? Did you learn it from a yogi or something? Or
no, I. How did I learn to meditate? Well, I read some books and stuff, but I think actually, a girl that I was dating kind of taught me that. She had studied Vipassana and had gone on some meditation retreats and different things, and she taught me that, and I was off to the races.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And Errol, you haven't started yet?
No, I probably need it more than anybody. But
I'm gonna get him on it eventually.
Yeah. I'll make time for that.
Yeah. There's a real like a new group of the TM people that are coming to Austin here real soon.
Oh really?
Yeah. Yeah, like a real I don't know, a youthful surge, if you will.
That's good.
Of people that are coming and bringing it to Austin. It's supposed to be pretty exciting. I might check that out.
It seems like now in this day and age, it seems like it should almost everyone should do it just because you got to have 20 minutes that you unplug because everything's so plugged in. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's been intense. It's very intense, man.
Yeah.
It's real fast moving and, you know. How are you guys like with the release of the album? Like, is there a lot of focus at this point, like on the social media and like, how are we gonna? Because there's like times a day and there's like you know, how do you push it without just pushing the same thing over and over? You know what I mean? Like,
right. Well, you know, social media is something that you know we've taken to pretty naturally and as a band, and that's been a big part of how we reach out to people and. One of the things that I think is pretty unique to this band is everybody has jobs. Everybody has jobs, meaning responsibilities in the band. And it's much more common in a band situation to have one or two people that really just kind of do everything.
Yeah.
And then other people are just asking, where do I need to be and when do I need to be there? And when we formed this band, that was a pretty conscious decision we made that, well, you know, in this day and age, that just doesn't work that well anymore. There's just too much to do and not enough hours in the day. And so that was part of the process. Well, if you want to be in this band, that there's you have to be part of the whole process of it. And so we have a couple of guys that's mainly what they focus on. So they have the time during the day. That's one of their main responsibilities is keeping that stuff happening. And we kind of share those responsibilities and work together to make sure we have stuff to say and get it out there. And I guess fortunately there's been enough to talk about that. People have been really engaging
keeping it
with
fresh.
That.
Yeah. Well, the good thing is that you're on tour. It's not like you're, you know, you guys also like you've been playing residencies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Back to back nights.
Mm-hmm.
That's been really interesting. Cause the Blackheart's been really good to us since day one. And we were doing that. We've really built that thing over there with Mrs. Glass on Thursday nights to be in just pretty huge for a long time. And then when Steve opened Sea Boys and approached us about coming over there, I mean, it's an R&B soul club. I mean, it's just perfect for it. And we were like, you know what? We've always had this thing this idea that different parts of town, different people go to, and, you know, people would say, oh, you can't play in the same week in Austin twice, and it's just not been the case for us. I mean, you can play on the east side one night, and then you can play on South Congress one night, and different people are going to go to each show. There might be some people that would go to both, but different people will essentially show up. Yeah. And it's just more chances to get to see the band.
Yeah. I think, you know, there's certain themes that have...
There's different crowds, too. There's like a crowd that goes to the Continental Club, right, and that goes to Seaboys, and there's a crowd that goes to Rainy Street.
Yeah,
exactly. Sometimes, yeah. You know.
Yeah,
it's
and
not
we get that
same.
All the time. You know, we have certain fans that there are certain shows that they go to, right, because it fits their lifestyle, it fits, right, their schedule, where they, mm-hmm, want to go. You know, that's why we play at Central Market sometimes, because there are people.
You have fans that don't want to go to a,
yeah,
they not don't a smoky go, club anymore, but like not a nightclub.
A nightclub at midnight.
Or, yeah.
And yeah, late.
They want to go to something that's early in the evening that they can bring their kids to.
And, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so there's just this recurring theme of there's a lot of conventional wisdom about what you can and can't do and what you should and shouldn't do. And, you know, we've discarded a lot of that, just said, yeah, maybe the conventional wisdom is wrong. And that's one of them. One of those things is that, and talent buyers, clubs kind of have a problem with it sometimes, but they always come around that idea that, oh, well, if you're going to play this one show, then you can't play anywhere else.
Yeah,
around town for a long period of time, and we've just never gone along with that, and felt like, well, we're gonna go a different direction with it, and been happy with the results, and hasn't hurt us at all. And yeah, these residencies have been a big part of it.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
yeah,
been really cool.
Yeah, who was I talking to? But I was talking to my friend Will about it from Shivery Shakes the other day. You know that band?
Mm-hmm.
And. We were just like, I was like, wow, I mean, you can really do that here now, I guess. So the world is...
It's just a big enough city now that you have all these different neighborhoods and different groups of people. And you know, it's not like you're oversaturated if you play more than one or two shows, you know.
Oh. Yeah, we still play for new people at the Black Heart all the time. And we've been playing that residency on Thursdays when we were in town for over 2 years now.
Yeah,
right?
It's been a long time.
And we still play for people that actually say they hang out at the Black Heart a lot. And it's still the first time they've seen
us.
Right. So, I mean, there's just a lot of people in town now.
Yeah, there's a lot of people.
Yeah, they're just coming all the time.
Are you guys playing South By?
Yeah.
A lot?
Yeah, yeah. Well, we have our official showcase,
right,
again, and we're looking forward to that.
Where's that? You know?
It's going to be at Lucky Lounge.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and then we're also playing two... you know, day parties.
Okay.
And that's, we'll probably hold it to that. It's the same exact thing we did last year. And in previous years, we kind of really swung for the fences. We're doing that thing where, hey, let's play 11 times in 3 days. And we decided
that
was just
insane.
Well, this
one, you have a new record.
Yeah.
And so is that the main focus, is to get to publicity,
yeah,
to get...
It is. It's a little bit different. The focus is about, you know, the various partnerships we have and kind of solidifying those and who they want to bring out to see what is going on. Like it's a little bit less about just, say, getting in front of random people, whoever
of
happens
course
to be there, and more about
who the Stag Records can bring from so-and-so magazine.
Exactly.
Or like,
maybe
your booking agent can bring a guy that's a talent buyer from Chicago or something.
Right.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah,
yeah,
it's that
yeah
kind of stuff. And so it's much more...
It's more
industry
of a promotional. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. That's good, though, because I feel like South by Southwest and every South by Southwest that I've ever played, the way that I've been like, oh, this is really set up for when you put out a record and you have a machine behind you.
Mm-hmm.
Because everyone's here, you can reach everyone, and, you know.
Yeah, there's an aspect of, like, hey, it's for the fans, and it's a lot of fun, but in reality, that's really what these kind of festivals are about, is that industry side, and, you know, we've never really had a problem with that, just acknowledging that, well, we've chosen to do this for a living, and so we've accepted that it's a business, and that there are aspects of the business that we just have to be involved in so that we can keep it going, and
right,
this is one of them, and we're not unhappy about it.
I think one thing, like, as a musician that plays it, is everything has to be backlined.
Yeah,
yeah.
There's no way.
Yeah, we say in previous years when we just stacked show upon show,
yeah,
and we had we had a driver just waiting at the curb
Fred
for us.
I've done that
good
before.
Friend, Fred, who's an amazing driver. I mean, it's like the French Connection when he's behind the wheel.
It was crazy. And we did have a trailer that day, and he was flying through traffic in a trailer. Van.
He did things I couldn't have predicted.
I was shocked. It was, yeah.
Three years ago, me and Jeremy Nail had to cancel. Like, we were just like, man, we're 5 minutes away, 12 blocks, completely stopped traffic. There's nowhere to park. We're not going to make it.
It's not going
to
happen.
We had a 20-minute set. We wouldn't have even been there by the end of it.
Oh, that's terrible.
A couple years ago, we did 5 shows in one day, and I think that was the day that he was driving us, and I don't know how we made it to all of them. There was one that was, like, really close.
We made them all happen, and we have no regrets, but, you know, this year and last year, both we decided, you know, let's not do that. Let's pick a couple of things that we think are really, really important, that we think are going to be really good, and let's do those, and then just give ourselves a little bit of a breathing room. And and we'll really only be in town for 2 days of South by this year, because we've got to get back on the road. So we'll be here for those 3 things over the Wednesday and Thursday, and then Friday morning we got to start driving.
Damn.
So
is that the Jackson?
We're playing a festival.
Yeah, that's gonna be fun. Trombone Shorty and Dumpster Funk. And
Brownout.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it should be really.
They're doing the Brown Sabbath.
Brown Sabbath, man. Finally gonna get to see it. Like, we play really so much. Pumped. I haven't got to see Brown Sabbath yet.
I love that band.
Yeah, I was telling that to Alex. I was like, man, I'm finally gonna get to see this show because we are always playing. So I'm looking forward to that.
What are you guys listening to right now?
I'm listening to Lee Fields right now a lot. I do have the new. The semi-new Gary Clark Jr., the live.
Oh, yeah.
Double live.
Yeah, that's a really good album.
It's been
Dude, man. I like...
Mm-hmm.
I didn't
seems
see
great.
Him the other night on that Stevie Wonder thing, but I heard it was really great, and he was singing with Beyonce and stuff. Mm-hmm. That's so cool.
Yeah. I saw the pictures. I didn't see the performance.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Lee Fields is this soul guy that's been killing it, man. Lee Fields and the Impressions. Expressions. Sorry. I was just listening to the Impressions before I left my house. Yeah, it's great, and we've got to play some shows with him this year, and he's been really, really good to us, really cool to us on a personal level. Showed up to one of our shows,
nice,
when he was in the state of Texas, and so cool cat, cool cat.
Yeah, and St. Paul and the Broken Bones has been doing really well. Been listening to their record,
nice.
And Alabama Shakes, and
they're really good.
They've got a new one coming out actually.
Really?
I think real soon. And Charles Bradley,
Vintage Trouble, they got a new record coming out.
Vintage Trouble, been doing really great. Been listening to them a lot.
Do you guys how do you listen to music? Do you do Spotify, Pandora, radio, albums, download?
Here we go. Open a can of worms.
Good.
I'm like, I'm trying to buy CDs again. I had gotten into where I was doing some of the Spotify stuff, and he can give you his Spotify spiel, and he's ready for it, I'm sure. It feels good, man, to walk in a store and buy a CD.
Sure, it does.
It does.
Feels amazing.
I grew up that way, and it feels really good.
Me too.
Take your hard-earned cash in there and say this record and this guy's career means something to me. I'm going to lay it down on the table and buy it.
I've been preaching this for a while, and I realize I'm fighting against the inevitable, but that's okay. There are all kinds of, I joust at windmills all the time on all kinds of issues. So why should this be any different? But the
Errol Quixote.
But the principle is just that I feel like the streaming. For one, I don't think it's inevitable. I don't think we have to accept anything as inevitable. All kinds of things, major changes happen in attitudes all the time that nobody sees coming. And so people walking around saying, well, streaming is just how it's going to go. Just accept it. I don't think I do need to accept it. And I'd rather convince people that, I don't think that's the best way to consume music. I don't think it's satisfying for artist or listener. It just when you have running tap water.
How do you say that? Explain how it's not satisfying.
There's a lot of levels, but part of it is part of the musical experience is what you had to go through to procure it.
Sure.
And, I realize this dates me a bit, but, I remember when, you didn't even have listening stations. You were going off a review in a photocopied zine and you're ordering.
Or a guy at the record stores.
Yeah.
And like,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I had a guy like totally that in Miami at Specs.
And sometimes, you're ordering something by mail order because it's not carried.
Even available in
any store. Yeah, yeah. It's this import. And I liked the logo and the design. Like, you had to hunt for good music.
You were reading an interview with one of your favorite bands. He was saying he's been listening to this record.
Yeah, absolutely. I got to find it. And a lot of the joy is that discovery experience, that where you appreciate it and take the time. And Tay, you've talked about this as well. Sometimes there's a record that if you can just hit a button and listen to it, you're not going to put the time into it to really experience that record. And you might dismiss it because it just doesn't grab you right away. But when you had to go through some effort to go procure that, you're going to give it some serious repeated listens. And maybe on the fourth or fifth listen, it's going to be your favorite record of the decade.
You guys, this is the best conversation I've had about this. And I've had a lot of them lately.
It's, that's important. I mean,
this is the best argument I've ever heard. I've got nothing for you. Wow, you're right.
Checkmate,
you
my
are
friend.
Totally
checkmate.
Right.
You know, and you think about just,
effort. There's no effort.
There's no effort.
I was just thinking the other day, we played in Louisiana. I rode with my friend Paul, and just all the way home, he was like, he doesn't have Spotify. I'm like, I've got it. You know, I pay for it and stuff, but name a song.
Yeah.
And so we literally did that from there to here, but some of the songs we didn't even listen to all the way through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you just don't
see if it's there. Oh, yeah, it's there. All right. Yeah,
and you don't know the names of the songs. You don't hold
the... played on the record.
You don't hold it and look at it and read the back of it and memorize it and write it down and make your mix and
artwork
do all that kind of stuff.
Artwork means nothing.
Yeah. All of it's just...
So it kind of creates this very superficial listening experience where it's either just like a crafted pop hit that grabs you immediately, or it just sort of floats on by. And I don't know that that's the world I want to live in. I don't want all music to have to pass that test. That can I grab people within 3 seconds with it? Otherwise, it's just over. Yeah. So that's kind of part of it. And so that's why I say it affects the listener and the creator. You know, I wouldn't want to create music in an environment where that's what I'm creating it for. I'm creating this for it to be just on tap for anyone to randomly listen to have no real connection to it, no real connection to the band. And I think it really robs the listener in a really big way. It just robs them of an experience that could be much
richer.
Better and much richer and deeper, that it just doesn't encourage that at all. And then there's just the hard fact that it, financially, I don't think it works out well for any artist to try to distribute their craft that way. And we just try to educate our listeners. People ask us at shows, well, can I just listen to it on Spotify? And we explain that,
Like Taylor Swift.
I'll tell you, we'd rather, there's some things you should know about it. And you realize people don't know that. They just think, I thought artists were all happy with it because it's not Napster, we're paying for it.
Right.
But they don't realize how little of that is making it to any
How
given
can you
artist.
Think that $7.99 is paying anybody anything?
Well, it's just, you're not thinking about it all that much. It's just, but again, it's just that idea of having this, I remember having that experience of having a cassette in my car and just it flipping and you're just listening to it over and over and you get something different out of it every time.
Yep.
It's an experience you're not going to have when you have 8 million songs on tap at any moment. You won't get into
it. I've had this conversation with a lot of people, but one that comes to mind the most is one that I had with Frenchie, because he lived in Oklahoma in a little town, and he had to go to Dallas. He had to drive 3 hours to go find records. And it was a quest. There was
But I'll bet that those records that he got have meant a lot more to him and probably enriched his life
more. He checked out on Spotify yesterday or something.
Hit a button. Yeah. And so, is convenience always your friend? Is that always enriching your life?
Yeah.
The convenience of being able to hit a button, is that really good for you?
You're right. And all this level of convenience, it seems like it's making everything easier. It's kind of taking the soul out of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
If that...
It does, it feels so superficial. So we have, and that's been a discussion with the record label.
And that's the thing, that's with your band too. I mean, it's a tangible, it's real, you record live, it's not fake. It's you're right.
So that's our take on it, and we could go another 6 rounds on it.
I'm not. I don't even want to argue with that. I think that that is, I think that that's the most solid argument I've ever heard on that, ever.
Yeah. And I hope other people come along with that. And I think some people are. I think some people are sort of, and that's, I think, where a lot of the vinyl resurgence is coming from, that idea of I want this experience, I want this object.
I do them both, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes I do that, but I do like to, you know, put on an album and then side one ends and you go and listen to the other side and, you know.
Yeah, yeah, just have a level of engagement.
And you go like, oh, you know, look at the artwork and like, wow, these people really did a good job with this, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was doing that this morning.
Oh, yeah.
The impressions.
Oh, yeah.
And then Mamas and Papas.
Yeah.
Which is like not what I expected to listen to this morning, but Monday, Monday.
Yeah.
That's a good band.
It was, yeah. It was a great experience. I flipped that record and I flipped it again.
And you guys haven't had any merchandise to sell or t-shirts?
Yeah, we have t-shirts.
I don't have a t-shirt.
You don't have a t-shirt?
I thought since I got on the ground floor, at least motherfucker would get a free t-shirt.
You'll get a shirt.
We'll get you a shirt. You know, we have focused not as heavily as.
But now it's going to be like
that,
a.
We'll probably have some more.
I bet it's going to be a nice to be get some more income. You guys got new t-shirt designs for the albums. Do you have some other stuff like lighters or something?
No, we haven't gone that route. And that's, man.
My friends have lighters and they're cool.
You're getting me up on my soapbox again.
He's up. Go ahead. Is this the Howard Stern
show? No, give me some stuff. Come on.
This is some Howard Stern stuff here.
Please. Man, and I'll probably have to eat these words because I'm sure this will change. But one of the things that I've always respected about Howard Stern is that he doesn't merchandise himself to death when he clearly could. And he speaks about it.
I've never even thought about that.
He doesn't make t-shirts and posters and stickers.
He doesn't. I mean, he writes books and makes movies.
Right. But that's what the reason why is he considers that's his craft.
Yeah.
That's what's valuable and that's what he feels good about selling.
Yeah.
And he feels like, I'm not a t-shirt designer. I'm not a key ring maker, he expresses regularly that he feels like I would just be taking advantage of my fans, selling them junk with my name on it, and I could make a ton of money on it, but I would feel like I was taking advantage of their support that I don't need. I don't need that support, so I'm not going to take advantage of that.
Yeah, but also that's Howard Stern.
I know he's
super rich,
right? But he wasn't always.
No. I know.
He wasn't always.
I know.
That's why I said, and I may come around on that more.
So where do you?
I mean, we're gonna sell t-shirts. Okay. We're gonna have stickers. When you mentioned the lighter, though, that was one of the things, like keychains and lighters and back scratchers and.
Yeah, koozies.
What
and
about
everything.
Mugs?
I look at each item on its own merits, and in general, I get that some of the transaction is, hey, this is a way for people to support what we do and to show other people that they support it, and there's nothing wrong with that. But anytime we look at something like that, I look at it pretty carefully to decide, you know, do I feel like this is just crass? I'd rather put my time into let's write some more songs and release a single. You know, that's our craft. That's what we do. And let's get people to see that, you know what, that's worth money. Don't try to get your, because there is this attitude going around right now that says, well, give the music away for free, but you'll sell a boatload of merch. And that's just
backwards.
That's not where I'm coming from.
Yeah,
so I feel like I would rather fight the battle of convincing people that, you know, I'm not a clothing designer, but this is my craft, and I feel like that's worth money, and I'd rather convince you that that's worth money, and I'd rather you spend, if you're going to spend money on me, I'd rather it be on that. I guess t-shirts I'm comfortable with because that's such a traditional concert item. I have a drawer full of concert t-shirts, and I'm glad I have them. And so maybe that's not rational, but I feel like, no, t-shirts.
Part of it.
T-shirts are cool.
Name your top five most important concert t-shirts in that drawer.
Oh man, that's going to be embarrassing. Some of them.
Go do it.
Robert Plant is
like a solo.
Yeah,
like Now and Zen. Or
yeah,
something?
Now yeah, and yeah, Zen yeah, tour. Yeah. It's, you know, Stevie Ray Vaughan was opening, and
oh really?
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, that was, and I don't know why, but that was just a really, really memorable.
My friend,
concert.
I think, produced that album. You know, Tim Palmer.
I don't know him.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Well,
I think so. He did a bunch of those records.
Could be.
I think he did all the records that he.
Yeah, I mean, he had a bunch at that time, and that one I have.
Okay.
And, you know, got that in vinyl. And
where did you see that show?
K Wings Stadium, Kalamazoo, Michigan.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
whatever year that was, 80 something.
80, ooh, boy, that was maybe, is that 84 or 85?
God, you
maybe?
Must have been a child, just an infant. That was, do you remember that?
It was, no, it might have been a little later. That wasn't. Might have been like 80, might have been 86, 87.
That was after My Love as It Leads to the Freeway.
Yeah, yeah. So I
okay,
don't know.
Okay, so what's the next one? Robert Plant. That's a good one, by the way.
You know, and this, man, these are some strange ones, but, you know, Gaslight Anthem. I wear that shirt. All the time.
I know that name. Is that someone from here?
They're from New Jersey.
New Jersey.
Yeah. And they've, you know, it was, that was like one of those, to me, kind of magical concerts. And it was at Antone's. And this was right when they started to really hit big.
Oh, okay.
And it was right at that moment where, like, you could tell that they were just blown away by what was happening.
Yeah.
Where they were still.
They came out of the gate strong. I was at that show.
They were still. You know, so this is a sold-out show at Antone's. Everybody was singing along with every word, and they just were clearly baffled. Like, they had no idea that this was really
great feeling.
A thing, because they were still in a crappy van with a crappy trailer. Yeah. Like, they were clearly still in the unknown punk band touring everywhere mode.
They were shocked.
Yeah.
And they were. It was the whole bit of, like, looking at each other and smiling in real time on stage. Like, oh, my God, they know all the words to our songs. And there's, like, people jumping up and down in the front.
Yeah.
And it was just, like...
Yeah, it was just it was a great. So we were both at that show, and it's a terrible T-shirt. It's uncomfortable. It doesn't fit right. But I have a really good memory from it. You know, I remember that they played a Replacements tune. That was really cool, and they it was just, you know, it's really cool to see a band before, like, they're clearly just blowing up like crazy, but they're not jaded at all. They just, this is, you know, it's like when Nirvana came back from Europe, and all of a sudden they're huge and had no idea that they were.
Yeah,
they were huge. Like that's something you get to only really see once.
Yeah.
So that one kind of sticks out to me. What about you?
You have T-shirts?
I have T-shirts, but you know what? I never bought that many shirts at the concerts. So I have like band T-shirts, but they're not like as many of them that I actually bought at the show.
Man, I did, but I was warm, and then they like. Are gone, but I had. I had like a Def Leppard Pyromania shirt that I would give my left nut to have back.
Yeah. Chris has an amazing collection of all her old NXS. How is t-shirts she doing? And stuff. Good. Yeah. Just got on a plane for California about an hour ago. She's moving and shaking, doing her thing.
Yeah. What a fantastic lady she is.
Yeah.
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 It's too bad she's so fucking ugly.
Oh God. Oh.
No, she's really pretty. Come on.
Yeah.
No, that's why I said that. Hopefully I know her well enough to have that sort of familiarity. Yeah,
yeah. No, she's beautiful.
To lay some Don
Rickles shit on. And she like always sends us off on the road with like baked, fresh baked goods.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
So she's
not only does she bring them out with that big, pretty smile, but then she like hands them to us and it like smells good and we eat it all in the first hour.
Yeah.
And you recently got them in a, did you get it engaged or something?
No, I'm not engaged. I am in a relationship though.
Okay.
Yeah. People think I'm engaged because when I'm in love with somebody, man, it's just out there for the world to see.
Ain't nothing fancy.
It ain't nothing fancy. It's love.
Yeah.
You know, I don't hide it. I don't.
That's cool. And obviously I've seen Chris and she doesn't have a problem with the fact that you're up there sweating and probably ladies are just like, oh, it's Tay.
No, she's into it. She's getting it, man. She's getting it. You know that.
Good.
I'm excited.
And obviously, I've seen Chris at shows and stuff. Mm-hmm. She likes the band. She thinks it's cool.
Yeah,
she loves the band. Has a good time.
She loves the Black Heart Residency show. That's her favorite thing to come to. And she gets her Roxy Roca fix on Thursdays. It's good.
Nice, man.
Yeah.
So this tour that you're going on that starts in, you guys have a lot of college fans? Like, are the kids coming?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's been really happening.
That's fucking that's awesome, cool man.
Yeah, it's been cool.
Especially when you get to be our age, because you're like...
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm Skyrocket, and it's...
Yeah.
They're not as young as they used to be, these people. You get a little like, oh, man.
Right. It's one of the interesting things about playing soul and funk music is that, like, the people that come to the show, it's just, like, from baby boomers to, like, you know... 21-year-olds.
It's timeless.
Yeah.
You know, while at the same time being classic.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been cool that to be at shows where it doesn't feel like it's sort of a narrow in-crowd kind of demographic. It's just pretty accessible for a lot of people and you know, almost any show we go to, there is somebody there that's got a good story of someone they met or some show they saw in 1968, you know, seeing Al Green or meeting James Brown and kind of that part of it. And then, you know, because we do covers in our set.
What do you cover?
Well, you know, usually kind of deep tracks, but, you know, like with a, there's a James Brown tune that probably nobody's has any idea is a James Brown tune, and we'll put that in the set, and it's kind of cool to introduce people to it that are younger. They don't really know that older catalog, and to be able to say that, yeah, here's this. It was this single. You should check it out.
It's cool.
You know, there's a...
Not on Spotify, but
not
go
on
to
Spotify,
the record.
No, go to your record store.
Yeah, go on Request.
Go dig it up.
Go Waterloo. Up. Go start digging through some bins. Find it on vinyl. Yeah. Have that experience. Go, and I think that's been cool, you know, turning people on to some music that they've never heard before, but that clearly informs what we do and the songs that we're writing.
Not to get back on that subject, I wonder, like, how inspired the younger generation of musicians will be if they're getting their music from that Spotify feed as well. I mean, it's like, I know for me, the whole musical dream started laying on the floor in what was, like, called the dining room, which is where the record player was, and taking all my dad's albums out, spreading them out on the floor. And it was like, the Temptations and like all that kind of stuff, and their suits and their French cuffs and their hair fades, and like looking at the pictures, Sly and the Family Stone, opening it up and seeing them on stage and thinking, God, this is a spectacle. Look at his shoes. Look at the crowd.
Yeah.
You know, like that made me want to do it.
Yeah.
And not just that,
you know, having it because you were tied to that record player, you're doing that and nothing else.
Yeah.
You're not having your earbuds in and listening to music while you're doing eight other things, you know, that you're just immersed in the experience.
That whole rock and roll fantasy. I mean, where's it going to come from?
You're right.
I don't know.
And you know, another thing, and I got to say this because it's really true. Like, when I was nine, I knew Russ Conkle was the drummer for Jackson Browne, and I knew Liberty DeVito was the drummer for Billy Joel.
Yeah.
Like, I knew that shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then when I'd see, like, Russ Conkle on, like, a fucking Carly Simon, I'd be like, fuck!
I know that guy.
Yeah.
He's my guy from Running on Empty.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
So
totally.
I knew Jim Keltner. Like, right. I felt like I, like, you know, and fucking Skunk. Like, Jesus, you know? How many records was his name on?
Yeah.
And they're just not on anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you don't even really know who produced stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you don't. If that's the way you get your music, you don't. Yeah. You don't know that.
You really don't. Yeah. And you really don't know song titles.
I think the song title thing,
though, went out with the CDs. Because ever since the early 90s, people have been like, oh, I love number 7.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Although, I don't know. But I also remember, you know, back in the day, a lot of how you'd get turned on to stuff is somebody bought a record and they would make a cassette copy for you and you have nothing and you would just listen to that. And then, and I remember buying a lot of things because I got so into that, like, you know, I need to own this. I need to have it.
Yeah.
And I just don't know how many people are turning that corner. Like, ostensibly, that's what's supposed to happen with Spotify. People are going to hear you on there, and then they're going to go out and buy it. But I just don't think
I've heard some people say that it's been great for them on that level.
My dad always tells a story about that because he was like, he was really into this band when he, in the 60s, when he was like in school, he was into this band called the Tams, and they were like a South Carolina kind of beach soul music kind of thing. But they would come through, they would tour through Alabama, and he was always really excited to see them. When the record came out, A Time for the Tams, it was all the songs that he loved, and he loved it so much that he bought two records the day it came out, and he put one up in the back of his closet, and one he listened to just so he would never be without that record if anything happened, because he was so worried he wouldn't be able to get that record. Yeah. And years and years later, at a casino, he saw that band, and I think the name of the singer, I think his name was Joe Pope or something. At that time, he was like 70-something years old, and he was like playing, and my dad told him that story, and he said the guy like teared up, and he was just like,
I almost did
you
that.
Really are a fan, you know? And he was like, oh yeah, I was a fan, you know? And he was like, man, that you're all right. You know, he was like, he was all excited. So,
but I will say the key part of that story is that he saw them live.
Yeah.
And that's how I heard about him. So still really, that's still, no matter what people say, that's it. Like, if you're a good band, you're good live. If you're, you know, if you're a bad band, you're not going to make it because you suck live.
Yeah, yeah. And that, you know, and we've all had that experience seeing a band where you like the record and the live show just doesn't deliver.
And you know what? I appreciate in this day and age you guys doing this thing that's completely organic, but it's completely dance. It's completely, there's overall positive feeling of it, you know?
Yeah.
And you guys as performers, you're not like Like when I started out, I really wanted everyone in the room to like just freak out on me.
Yeah.
You know, it's, can you believe it? It's me. I'm here finally under the spotlight.
Right.
But now, and you know, it's not a very giving performer at that point. You're kind of a dick.
Yeah.
But you guys have like, I mean, it's a huge onslaught of people like giving this energy. You know what I mean? And I think that that overall will always be like such a great, I just think that like people in the world right now, the dance music culture is freezing cold. It's mm-hmm. a guy that's not even really looking at you. Not even really doing anything mm-hmm. except having a playlist a lot of the times. Some of those guys really don't do fucking anything.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's it's hard for me to fathom.
And, yeah. And some of it's really bad. Like I spend a lot of time. I got on Spotify in September after fighting that stuff for a long time.
Okay.
But then I started thinking like I'd never go buy a fucking Diplo album.
Right.
Or a song or anything. Yeah. So I'm okay. I'm gonna run. I'm gonna listen to just Diplo, Skrillex, and you know a bunch of people, Bass Nectar, and all this kind of stuff. A couple of things were exciting sounding to me and kind of like cool, and I could be like, oh, you know, if I was at a place, and you know, I would be like, oh yeah, it's a good jam. But most of it was like just weird sound effects for people on drugs and then dropping in halftime the time. You know, that you got to drop that beat or it's not going to happen.
Or the tours where it's like a person from a band doing a DJ tour.
Yeah, that's weird.
God, I can't stand
that.
That's
been a trend that I don't get.
Yeah, but like when you go see Tom York like DJ a thing, he's almost like a DJ at a nightclub. As well, like old school kind of guy that like plays his favorite tunes and kind of, there is an art to it. Like I was a fan and friend of guys in the 80s in Houston at these dance clubs, these guys that were like really good DJs. I mean, they only spun records. They didn't claim.
Yeah.
They were doing original music.
They never released things themselves. They were playing like New Order and Erasure and all this kind of stuff. But they could create an hour or a 45-minute side of a thing that really took you places with other people's songs and the way that they put them together. And that, to me, is really exciting.
I mean, I can see it as a party kind of thing or you know, or South by Southwest.
Sure.
Like, you know, someone's, you know, DJing at the Four Seasons for some party or something, and that's cool because it's like they're there or whatever. But
I would
charging $20 to come see me DJ,
that's
you know, that's just crazy.
Sounds a little crass.
Yeah.
That's crazy. And I'm talking about the artist from like a band that's DJing. I'm not saying like someone that spends their time honing the craft of like DJing and mashups and all that.
Sure.
There's a lot of that I don't understand, and it may be worth the money, but I'm just, you know.
I would rather see you guys at a party.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah. Well, you know, we try to look at the show as
it's a party.
It's not really about us. You know,
it's about like the us, like everyone
the
together,
whole room, like, let's, and you know, giving people an experience and thinking about, you know, when we're arranging the songs and when I'm kind of crafting the how should the show go, you know, that I'm thinking about creating moments and how to, you know, how do we do this so that we keep people in the moment, because that's the main thing that we can bring to anybody. If we can get people to sort of be here now and be part of that.
No, keep on. Finish.
You know, then we're giving people an experience that's got some real value. And that's, you know, it's why, like when we play our show, you know, songs, you know, it's like one big long song. Every song kind of leads into the next one. And it's very choreographed, but done that way for a reason, to kind of keep people in that moment the whole time. So it feels like it just keeps flowing beginning to end, so that maybe at the end of it people feel like, wow, that was
great. I lost myself for a little while. I was in the moment.
Yeah. I almost had like a meltdown in San Antonio the other night. We played the Aztec Theater with Skyrocket. And it was going off. It was totally packed. 70% of the people had at one point had their fucking phones up.
Yeah,
yeah.
And I said to Trish when we went backstage, I was like, remember that book? My mom had it. It's this purple book with this weird design. Said, "Be here now, all in a circle." Yeah. That's all you want to say to these people. Like, just put it fucking down.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just let's do this.
Yeah,
let's
get it on.
Let's do this. You're not going to watch that video.
Yeah.
It's going to sound like fuck when you get
home.
Yeah,
it's going to be terrible.
Yeah. When you try and show your friend tomorrow, they're going to be like, that is the most horrible sounding thing I've ever heard.
Yeah.
And the band.
Yeah.
And the bands don't want you uploading it either. So it's like,
let's just do it.
Yeah,
let's just fucking put it down.
Make a memory.
Enjoy our time.
Make a memory.
So it's a lot of how we try to judge that. And you know, we had there was a review of our last show at Continental Club with some Dallas magazine, and it was, I think, the best compliment that we've ever ever read about ourselves in print, because it was a it was a sold out show. It was jamming, and they said that, you know, what made the show unusual is that nobody had their cell phones out. Nobody was taking pictures.
So too busy fucking dancing and having a good time.
Yeah, and it was just sort of that kind of hit that, yeah, that's what we're trying to do. That's some of the challenge. Now, you know, full disclosure, you know, we have some fans that they're, you know, they like kind of recording that stuff for other people that couldn't be there. I mean, it's all meant in the best possible way.
Oh, yeah, I'm not downing the people at all. Yeah, yeah. I mean,
but we do want to feel like let's try to create this experience where you can just be into it for this moment.
Culture has been moving that way, though, you know? Yeah.
It's hard. I mean, it's a full-blown addiction, the phone thing. Yep. It's a lot of people are out of control with it, and they don't know it. And, you know, I'm guilty of it sometimes, too. Like, why don't I have my phone out right now?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's just,
well, because also you got to hope that some people take pictures and post it, because that helps you spread the word.
Right, exactly. So there's a give and take, but I'd like to think that there's a certain kind of balance where that can
for
can
every
happen.
Person that's out there taking pictures and videoing, though, there's another person that's just out there scrolling through Facebook, and that's the thing that you
that's
don't want
what's
going
pissing
on.
Me
that's
off.
What
yeah.
you don't want yeah. going on. It's like just, you know, just doing something on
dude
there.
Dwight, you know Dwight Baker?
Yes.
So his fucking awesome story about someone standing in front of him and going through it. And he said by the third song of the fucking thing, he kicked the phone out of the dude's hand.
Yeah. Wow.
He couldn't take it.
He just, this is over.
I was like, God, if I had those kind of balls, man, I would do that all the time.
Yeah.
It's so tough. It's hard to judge people for what they're doing. They paid their ticket.
And everybody's doing it. It's not like, hey, you know, we're doing it too at times. You
right,
know?
Right.
So,
but I can, you know, we try to look at it from that standpoint of when we're crafting our show and what we're putting into it, and why is it so choreographed? You know, it's because, well, if we can create this experience, if we can draw people into that, then we're really achieving something. We're really giving somebody the ability to let go of some stuff for a little while.
Yeah.
And it's more than just, hey, we're playing the same song we've been playing every night for the last 200 nights. Yeah. You know, there's more to it than that.
Yeah. Yeah. This has been a great conversation. Is there anything I'm missing?
Always.
Oh, yeah, you guys have an album
coming
out.
We have an album coming out. Maybe we should
mention
that.
No, I'll talk about it at the beginning of it, I promise.
Album release party at Sea Boys a week from tonight.
What is that? That's 25th. That's the day after the album comes out.
Yeah, the album hits the streets on the 24th.
Ain't Nothing Fancy, available February 24th. 2015 on Stag Records on vinyl, CD, and download. Produced by Lars Goransson. Performed by Roxy Rocha. Recorded at Ear Studios.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. Stillwater.
Yeah. Yeah, that's where the tour first
That's where it's
starts.
Gonna go. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's right.
And you're playing the College Bar, which probably doesn't need a lot of explanation.
No,
it's probably a bar near a college.
It is.
The college guys go to.
Yeah, it's a cool place. You know, we've been there before, and people really, you know, just have come out and gotten into the music. Like it doesn't look like much. I don't think they'd mind me saying that. I'm sure they know that, but it's got a good vibe.
Once again, ain't nothing fancy.
Ain't nothing fancy, man.
Yeah.
Sharing music.
Well, I love you guys. I'm glad you were on. This has been an incredibly pleasurable experience. Everyone should go out and get the album. Congratulations.
Thanks for having us back.
I'm very proud of
you. Good times.
Yeah.
Maybe we should say, if I can be crass and commercial for a moment, if you go to stagrecords.com, you can pre-order now.
Yeah.
And if you pre-order, they send you a free poster.
Okay, this will be out on Friday, but yeah.
Yeah. So they don't have to wait until...
Okay.
Yeah.
Release date. They can go on right now and place their order.
Go on, get it, and
and check out our new video for Love Maker DeVille.
Oh yeah, that's a great video, by the way.
Yeah,
congratulations.
Thanks. Yeah, shot at Sea Boys, where the party is going to be, and it was really cool. Great guest appearances in there.
Yeah,
Chantel from the Digital Wild is another great band in Austin.
Yeah,
and then Cerise Brown dancing in the video. Great, great video.
Yeah,
yeah.
You guys, hardworking band.
Thanks, man.
Show it, and it shows. You've done a great job, great album. And February 25th at Sea Boys. That's where it'll be going down.
We'll get your t-shirt.
Yeah, I'll go there and get a t-shirt. Bye, guys. Thanks.
See ya. Let love be my crime.
Nashville, yeah. All right. Roxy Rocha, fantastic dudes, man. Always nice to sit down and talk to Errol and Tay. Hardworking guys out there making a great record. Ain't Nothing Fancy comes out on Tuesday, February 24th, 2015. Their release show, if you live in Austin, is at Seaboys, the fantastic Seaboys, over there on South Congress. On February 25th, get over there. Find out what's going on with Roxy Rocha. Pick up their album, Ain't Nothing Fancy. It's coming out on vinyl. It's coming out on the CD, and it's available for download probably on iTunes. And while you're out there on iTunes downloading the Roxy Rocha Ain't Nothing Fancy album, don't forget you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. You can, and you will get every Tuesday and every Friday a new episode for you to enjoy of How Did I Get Here with your host, me, Johnny Gowdy. Thank you to Tay and Errol for coming by. Don't forget, you can get out there, get involved with it, man. You know, follow them on Twitter, follow me on Twitter. I'm at Johnny Gowdy. Instagram, at Johnny Gowdy. Let's get into it, man. Let's hear some more music from Ain't Nothing Fancy. These are my friends, Roxy Rocha. New record, February 24th, you guys. Get into it. Bye-bye.
Tired. I'm a bad old debonair. I'ma keep you safe.